Hello. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. My name is Naomi Lambert from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share articles with you from The Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. Well, today we're starting with an article called Law and Orders, and it's from the immigration section. It's an article by Greg LaCour. Even for immigration lawyers, navigating the Border Patrol's opaque operation in North Carolina is nearly impossible. For those detained, it can be life-altering. You can't unring the bell on the harm. U.S. Border Patrol agents stopped an immigrant worker Monday in Charlotte. The man showed agents a photo of his federal employment permit, but not the actual document, so they detained him. The two attorneys at Tedesco Legal, a Charlotte firm that specializes in immigration law, took the man's case pro bono on a referral from a fellow attorney. Late Tuesday afternoon, from their offices in a co-working space south of the city centre, Mary Lynn Tedesco and Anna Cushman were still trying to figure out where he'd been taken. A half hour later, Cushman's phone rang. She excused herself and hustled out of her office. "That was the mom of the client I'm trying to track down," Cushman explained when she returned about 5 minutes later. "I told mom, I want to know where he is. If you get any information, let me know." "It's a little bit of a shell game, because immigration officials can move them wherever they want," Cushman said. "That ICE detainee locator would be the most official way," she noted, referring to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is usually the agency that picks up immigrants in an inland city. "But I don't necessarily trust things coming out of the mouths of ICE agents. In this case, the agency conducts sweeps." Conducting sweeps is the Customs and Border Protection, a different division of the Department of Homeland Security that does not follow the same protocols. Tuesday was the fourth day of what CBP has dubbed Operation Charlotte's Web in Mecklenburg County. It also appeared to have expanded to the Triangle on Tuesday. After less than a week in the Queen City, the surge, as DHS described it, had forced multiple businesses in Latino neighborhoods to close, led to a near tripling of absences in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, and inspired protests and demonstrations. Tedesco and Cushman are among dozens of local immigration lawyers fielding urgent calls, emails, and texts from panicked clients and their relatives, trying to give them the best information and advice they can in an ever-changing environment. "You are on a long road in immigration, but remembering it's a long road is helpful too in times of crisis," Cushman said. "We've been training for this since the beginning." DHS claims 200-plus arrested in Charlotte. DHS said Tuesday that the Charlotte operation had detained more than 200 people since Saturday in what the department describes in a news release as an effort to target criminal illegal aliens terrorizing Americans. "I started getting emails about 8:15 Saturday morning. My brother was picked up. My dad was picked up," said Tedesco, a 36-year-old New Jersey native who opened her firm in 2020 and hired Cushman in September. "And these are existing clients." More followed, and she directed her paralegal to devote her time to fielding calls. The firm has about 250 clients, about a dozen of them pro bono. Tedesco and Cushman already had a full load. By Tuesday, they were swamped. Cushman described their work as frenetic. Tedesco described falling asleep about 9:15 p.m. Monday as she read a bedtime story to her five-year-old daughter. Cushman, 38, has twin four-year-olds, a boy and a girl. She said she was up late Monday night and back up early Tuesday morning, toggling between posts to a signal thread among immigration lawyers. "We've just got lots of moving pieces," she said, "even on a normal day." Their advice varied with each client, but their basic message for anyone confronted by Border Patrol agents, Tedesco said, "If you're documented, have your papers. Show that you are lawfully in the United States, and then say, 'I am lawfully here in the United States. Am I free to leave?'" If you're not free to leave, you call us, because at that point you should be, in theory, entitled to a lawyer. If not, there are other violations of constitutional rights going on. Probably, undocumented immigrants, she said, should try to stay home unless it's an emergency. I've kind of told people to lay low. People who need an attorney, she added, can contact Carolina Migrant Network, a Charlotte-based nonprofit that provides legal services to immigrants in removal proceedings. A few minutes later, Tedesco excused herself to catch up on a stack of about 20 messages. The cost of confusion. Cushman is a Charlotte native whose paternal grandmother, Dr. Johnny McLeod, founded what's now a substance abuse treatment center network. I love her legacy. She always saw the good in people, even in marginalized groups, Cushman said. So for me, who is the group on the margins that I really want to make a difference for? It's immigrants. Tedesco said she developed an interest in immigration law while in college at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. She majored in Spanish, which required study of civil wars, drug violence, and American political intervention in Central America in the 1980s. Both attorneys said they were somewhat accustomed to ICE detainers of one or two individuals, but the Border Patrol operation over the past few days has been much different. The tactics used by ICE to arrest and detain people are not the same as an indiscriminate militarized group in vans and trucks going around and hitting people in public places, Tedesco said. It's not the same large scale. I'm going to post up at a Home Depot parking lot and grab anyone who looks Latino. DHS did not respond to a request for comment about their operations on Tuesday night. And the attorneys still weren't clear as of Tuesday about where people who were detained are being taken. Communication with them is limited or non-existent. They named three ICE detention centers in Georgia and one in Louisiana where they believe DHS may be busing detainees from Charlotte, but they were still trying to confirm it. They emphasized that even legal immigrants' knowledge of their rights and the law is no guarantee that officers will respect them. Release without criminal charges from an ICE facility can take weeks or even months, irreparably damaging people's lives. Cushman said, you can't unring the bell on the harm. Our next article is back to elections. It's entitled Doge Eat Doge, and it's by Krista Dutton. North Carolina's 4th district was the hardest hit in the entire country. Could that come back to bite Republicans in 2026? When the Department of Government Efficiency started slashing federal grants, North Carolina's 4th congressional district was the hardest hit in the country. The solidly Democratic district in the Raleigh-Durham area is home to two Tier 1 research universities, 11,000 federal workers, and the largest research park in the country. As of May 2025, when Elon Musk left Doge, the district had lost 186 federal grants, according to a tracker from the Center for American Progress. The area is still reeling from the millions in lost federal funds, and those impacted said the cuts could play a role in the midterms, especially with the state home to one of the most closely watched Senate races of 2026. If you care about North Carolina as a purple state and as a state that could swing presidential elections, the House makeup and the Senate makeup, these conversations that we're having about the people who have lost their jobs are going to be economic stories, said Brianna Clark-Schwelm, executive director of the North Carolina Global Health Alliance. Next year, people aren't necessarily going to be talking about, was it USAID or was it some other federal institution? They're going to be talking about how many people don't have jobs. Democrats in Virginia specifically cited the chaos surrounding Doge cuts as one reason they did so well in November, as did labor unions who told Notice they saw increasing engagement during the off-year election cycle. It's unlikely that DOGE cuts in North Carolina will be as salient an issue as they were in Virginia's gubernatorial race, but they may be another reason voters are growing dissatisfied with Trump, said Thomas Mills, a former Democratic political consultant and election watcher in the state. You're going to have motivated Democrats who are the people that are getting impacted by these. They are going to come out, Mills said. The biggest single driver of Democratic turnout is going to be Donald Trump and his policies. Valerie Fushi, who represents North Carolina's 4th Congressional District, said she doesn't think the administration's claim that it's rooting out waste and fraud will land well in her district. You're solving a problem that doesn't exist, and in so doing, you're creating a bigger problem by way of taking away people's jobs, taking away people's livelihoods, and destroying local economies, even as you are destroying the national economy, she told us. RTI International, an independent scientific research institute in the Research Triangle Park, bore the brunt of the cuts, according to a report by Harris Search Associates, a consultancy for the higher education and research sectors. The firm's report found that DOGE cuts cost RTI about $1 billion and forced the company to lay off one-third of its workforce. Most of the grants stripped from RTI International came from the now-dismantled United States Agency for International Development. Others came from NASA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the National Institutes of Health. RTI is proud to partner with the current administration in scientific and technical areas that are aligned with our mission, Tim J. Gable, President and CEO at RTI International, told us in an emailed statement. He said that RTI is actively changing its business. This means expanding beyond our traditional federal portfolio into high-growth commercial sectors such as health, energy, and food agriculture, Gable said. The administration's decision to shutter USAID had direct impacts in the battleground state. North Carolina is the fourth highest recipient of USAID awards, according to the NC Global Health Alliance. The state received 153 active awards across 15 organizations from the agency. 9 of those went to the 4th District. Since January, North Carolina institutions have lost $3 billion in future USAID-funded awards. That was a massive hit to our institutions. We have major implementing partners here that employed thousands of people and impacted millions of lives around the world, said Clark Schwelm. FHI 360, a global health nonprofit in the Research Triangle Park, lost about half its revenue and laid off more than a quarter of its workforce, including 144 workers in North Carolina, after Trump dismantled USAID. The Alliance estimates that at least 625 North Carolinians lost their jobs due to the cuts. Leonardo Williams, the Democratic mayor of Durham, called DOGE cuts a self-inflicted wound. He said he's never seen more middle-class people apply for unemployment. They're basically not only dismantling some of these companies, they're dismantling households. That's what I see at the ground level in District 4, he said. I see less people shopping at the grocery stores. I see less people opting in to have their child at daycare. I see more daycares closing. He said voters in Durham and District 4 will consider Trump's push to downsize government and promote fiscal responsibility, led by billionaire Elon Musk, to be out of touch. I think people are going to remember that in the midterms, I'm going to do my damn well best part to make sure they know about it, Williams said. The campaign arm for Senate Republicans, the National Republican Senatorial Committee, did not respond for a request for comment. Universities also suffered cuts to their operations. University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill has lost $38.4 million in federal grants since Trump took office, reported the Daily Tar Heel. Most of those awards came from the National Institutes of Health. At Duke University, the federal government terminated or froze more than $135 million in grants. Mills said that Republicans may struggle to convince voters that blocking money from flowing into the state and downsizing the federal workforce will benefit them. A lot of this new populist Republican base is going to be motivated by things that the government can do for them, and that's not historically where Republicans have been, Mills said. It makes it difficult to say we cut the size of government and somehow it benefited you. Our next article is about higher education. Elon University is to start a private school for children with dyslexia. The plans to start the school, which the university says will be the first of its kind in the state, come at a time when Elon is taking big swings to raise its profile. The article's by Corey Dean. Elon University will launch a private primary school specialising in educating children with dyslexia next fall, joining Vanderbilt and two other universities in the South that offer similar programmes funded by the same donors. The Roberts Academy at Elon University, named for philanthropists Hal and Marjorie Roberts of Lakeland, Florida, will begin serving third and fourth grade students in an existing university building in the town of Elon. The school plans to expand the program in 2028 to serve first through sixth graders in a yet-to-be-built state-of-the-art facility, the university said in a news release. The specialized private school will be the first of its kind in North Carolina, according to Elon officials, and the plans come as the university is taking other big swings, even as many other private colleges struggle in a difficult environment. This year marks the halfway point of a 10-year strategic plan that aims to sharply define Elon's position as a national university and expand its footprint in strategic locations around the country. In September, university leaders announced Elon would merge with Queen's University of Charlotte. The university described the gift that will fund the primary school as a visionary investment, though it did not disclose the amount. The funds will also support the establishment of the Roberts Center for Dyslexia and Engaged Learning within Elon's education school to provide professional development for educators and public outreach to policymakers. The school is expected to serve between 150 and 200 students per year once it is fully enrolled, with no more than 12 students per classroom. Teachers will use the Orton-Gillingham approach for instruction, which Hal Roberts referred to in an interview with the Assembly as the gold standard for educating students with the disorder. Research suggests that between 15 to 20% of the US population has dyslexia, a language-based learning disability that impacts the ability to read and spell. This new gift is not just for Elon, University President Connie Book told the Assembly. In fact, this new gift is for the state of North Carolina and for students and parents who struggle to find services to support their dyslexic learners. Home away from home. The Roberts Academy at Elon will be the fourth such school the Robertses have funded, joining Vanderbilt in Nashville, Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, and Florida Southern College in Lakeland. Hal Roberts said the children became interested in dyslexia when several of their grandchildren experienced the learning difference. They had success at the Schenck School in Atlanta, which uses research-based instruction methods to help students with dyslexia develop strategies for reading and other language skills. That includes the Orton-Gillingham approach, a multi-sensory style of teaching in which the students might say a word, tap out its syllables, and write it down, among other steps, in order to develop their literacy skills. They immediately felt accepted and in the right place, and they prospered, said Roberts. Roberts, a lawyer who worked as city attorney for Lakeland and in private practice before forming a business that developed and marketed geothermal heat pumps, said he and his wife have always been involved with charitable organizations. But the couple was so moved by their grandchildren's success at the Schenck School that they decided to fund similar dyslexic education programs, starting with the one at Florida Southern in 2010. In their retirement, the Robertses have spent most of their time at a second home in Waynesville. they began to think about adding another school in the state that has become their home away from home. Their search turned up Elon, which the couple appreciated for its national ranking in undergraduate teaching. And as a private university, Elon offered the flexibility to establish a new academy without the restrictions a public university would face, Roberts said. The couple contacted Elon about the idea in July, Roberts said, meaning the effort will have taken just over a year by the time the school launches next fall. The academy will be staffed by yet-to-be-hired administrators and classroom teachers who will be full-time employees of Elon. Recruitment for the positions will begin early next year, per the university, and the academy will be led in the interim by Alicia Tate, an assistant professor in Elon's education school who specialises in literacy education approaches like the Orton-Gillingham. The Robertses say they do not play a role in the day-to-day administration or teaching. "We do observe it a little bit, just for our pleasure, our enjoyment, and we get a lot of that," Roberts said, "to see the success of these students and the ripple effect upon their entire family. That's our dividend from this investment." Serving Elon's community. Like the other Roberts academies, Elon's will be a private school. Other similar schools that specialise in educating children with learning differences, such as Greensboro's Noble Academy, are not affiliated with a university. Some UNC system campuses operate lab schools with local school districts, but they are public and serve a broader student population. Tuition for the new academy hasn't been set, but officials plan for it to be part of the state's legislative-funded Opportunity Scholarship Voucher Program, said Anne Bullock, Dean of the Dr. Joe Watts Williams School of Education. The state also offers education student accounts that provide funds for children with disabilities. Bullock and Book said the school will offer a public good despite its private nature. The academy is intended to be a transitional school, offering students 2 to 3 years of specialised instruction before they return to their home schools with new skills. And its connection to the university will help educate new teachers on how to better serve students with learning disabilities. The academy will also allow Elon to collaborate with the other schools the Robertses have founded, Bullock said. "We already have a great reputation in the state, but to move that to a more national presence will be exciting." The academy will also build on Elon's support of local schools and educators through programs like Teach for Alamance, which provides full tuition to master's candidates who teach for 2 years in the Alamance Burlington school system. "I do believe that it is the responsibility and mission of private universities in our state, and I know my peers at other privates embrace this, to be difference makers in people's lives." We've got time for one more short article on food and drink. A new fall obsession at Vida Pour Tea by Joe Killian. "Last year, around this time, when the leaves were changing and I'd stopped shaving for the season, the high temperature began to top out in the low 40s. This can be exciting at first, makes you want to break out an old pea coat and pretend you're Robert Redford in 3 Days of the Condor. But a few weeks of that and you're cold down to your bones. It's dark at 5 p.m. and you're worried about the onset of seasonal depression. Around that time, a source of mine suggested that we meet to discuss a story at Vida Pour Tea over on State Street. I'm not against the occasional tea, but I have never considered myself a tea person. That's an important distinction. There are folks out there who can occasionally and casually enjoy a thing. I see them doing it. It looks nice. But my people aren't built that way. I come from addicts and obsessives. Did we read that trendy new novel? Enjoyed it so much we had to read the author's other 12 books, even the bad ones. A cigarette? We'll see you and raise you a pack a day habit for the next 20 years. After dinner cocktail? Don't mind if we do. And we'll leave the car right here in this ditch so we know where to look for it in the morning. When you're the kind of guy who has thousands of comic books and hundreds of vinyl records at home, you don't want to wander into any new hobbies if you can help it. And from the moment I walked into Vida Porti, I could tell it was the sort of trap that always gets me. Will the very smell of the place intoxicate you? Certainly. Will the friendly, skilled and knowledgeable staff make you a fresh cup of Darjeeling or an I Love Earl Grey a latte? Of course they will. But while they are doing their magic behind the counter, you will turn around and be confronted by an enormous apothecary and sundries wall. The loose leaf teas and special blends will have whimsical and enticing names like Jasmine Silver Needle, Pumpkin Honeybush, Sahara Sunset, and Sleepy Hollow. Do you even know what to do with loose leaf tea? Are you more of a box of tea bags from the grocery store sort of person? Well, you don't have to be. Look around at the books of tea knowledge and lore, the various tools of the trade from the charmingly anachronistic to the technologically cutting edge. Did I walk into the shop that first time and within a month own a lovely little Moroccan tea set for two, a utility variable temperature electric kettle, organic local honey, and bags and boxes of the finest loose leaf stuff on which I could lay my greedy little hands? Of course I did. Do I regret it? Not for a minute. I am, even as I type this, sipping some of their delicious sweet spiced orange, and it is both warming me from the inside and doing wonderful things to my brain. Through the power, I'm sure, of antioxidants, adaptogens, and other things I won't pretend to really understand. I bought all this stuff. I'm drinking it. Isn't that enough? I can only say to you what I say about all of my secret public vices, in the sure knowledge you will, like me, ignore the warning completely. If you're not hooked, don't start. Well, that is pretty much it for today for the assembly. We've run out of time, but I really hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday. I'm Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is now available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.